So first things first, Daniel, how are you?
I'm very good, man. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm not too bad myself. Thank you for asking. Now, where I want to start is I read a little bit about the album, and one of the things that came, that was said was it kind of feels like a rebirth. How come?
Well, I think the simple answer to that is the fact that Dear Monsters, when I joined this band, was about 60% on its way. And this is the first album that I got to work on with the band from the ground up. So, these are my lyrics, they're my thoughts, they're some of my riffs. I got to be hands-on from the foundation up, and I think you can really tell in terms of just the material in general. There's a lot of different colors on this album, different vibes, and we got to really kind of me personally, I got to spread my wings a little bit and do some cool experimental stuff, and do some rapping, different voices, some different screams. We really wanted to make it a point to just go into this record and not say no to anything.
Now let's go into that transition between albums then for you personally, because was there any trepidation initially, or how did that confidence start to grow where you could put yourself out there in a way, or share your ideas with the group?
I don't think it really, for me, it doesn't really have anything to do with the confidence. I think it might actually be the opposite of that, where I now it feels like my band. Now it feels like this is our record. We feel like a tighter unit now, because it's a little easier once things are kind of in the rearview mirror. A lot of the ugliness of the history of the band, and it just we went through some things like very publicly, and the whole Dear Monsters cycle was just kind of tainted for us. So for this, it felt fresh. It felt like we felt the responsibility to keep the material fresh, and I think the opposite of that. It was me finally feeling comfortable with being vulnerable.
Now let's get into a little bit of that then, because what was your mindset lyrically then going into, because as you mentioned, now these are your thoughts and these are your kind of experiences. And when did the kind of overall theme or start to bubble to the top? Were you going through a certain thing in a space of time, or how did kind of the idea of the idea of bad friends and kind of this overall, I don't know how I should formulate this, but the theme of leaving the negative people outside of your life and looking for more positive things in life. I don't know, that's not a good way to describe it,
No,
but
it is. It is. Yeah. And that's exactly what Bad Friend is about. It's realizing and acting upon cutting toxic people out of your life. So yeah, I think, in general, a lot of subject matter on Die About It, even the title, stem from how, whether it's reality or not, how seemingly noisy things got with the history of this band, and member changes, and the way that the internet reacts to these certain things. And people can when people sign up for one club, they can get very, very tribal,
sure.
and defend what they signed up for, and vice versa. So in general, I have to thank the true Bad Wolves fans, because really, obviously, we can't do this without them, but they've really embraced me. True Bad Wolves fans have embraced me with open arms and have been super, super cool. And I think now, even with new material coming out, and they see that, we're continuing on as a band. Like, this wasn't just a kind of a flash in the pan, replace the singer, put a record out, and then it's done. Like, the the numbers kind of don't lie, and we're continuing on a trajectory of positive growth. And I think that our true fans see that and they stick with us through it. And you know, we all kind of went through the mud together. So it does feel like a rebirth, man. This album, we're so proud of it. And I think that it speaks to the core fan base and also goes beyond that. And I think there's a little bit of something for everybody on this album.
Yeah, and I think that's the line, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? You've come through the other end. And but let's get into the kind of your musical impact on the band then, because as you mentioned, the way you use your voice, there are several ways you do, but it's a very eclectic album. There's a lot of a variation in the song. So how do you see your kind of stamp on what the sound of the band is?
Well, me being a fan of the band before I came into it, I had a pretty good understanding of what's necessary in, or maybe not necessary, but I'll just say that for lack of
sure.
better word, but what's necessary to make a Bad Wolf song. And for me, that's always been me appreciating the fact that they can mix groove with such heavy riffs and still have these huge melodic parts. So I think, like, if we do that at the very least, you have the start of a Bad Wolf song. So but I think, you know, me coming in and this time being able to work fully and be another producer on this album, I think it changed things in terms of the ability to kind of do things on the fly. And I mean that in terms of me having my own studio and being able to track my own vocals at the same quality as we would in the studio with our producer and with our engineer, and spending a little more time with material, with it sounding the way it should, and like letting it simmer a little bit and either saying, yeah, I like this, or because of that ability, being able to be a little more, be a little less precious with what we're doing. So like, you know, you can retool a part 10 different ways and you throw it away every time and you don't feel so bad because there wasn't money spent, a little bit of time, but I think the efficiency was paramount doing Die About It, just because of having so many musical minds in this band and everybody having kind of their own rig at home now. That's kind of awesome. That's what's kind of great about like the modern production field, is sure. Like everybody kind of has their own studio at home, and you can kind of woodshed at home and do your shit and really prep for the studio, because once you're in there, it's, you know, you want to get it done and you can get it done satisfactorily. But I think that was a big positive to me being able to work on this album from the ground up. And John and I, we had a lot of late nights and conversations and tossing tracks back and forth and you know, try this here, move this bridge part here, and it's a lot easier now to put things together the way you want to and test them out.
But you need to have the right guys for that, right? You need to have the right guys who are open to the ideas and who are willing to kind of try things out. For instance, a song like the title track Die About It, how did the, what was the atmosphere around this song? Was everybody kind of immediately gung-ho?
No. Okay. Not at all. Actually, that song, earlier versions of that song were even heavier than what it is now.
Okay.
Yeah, there was, it started off with this really sick, I mean, we could have used it the way that it was. It started off with a really sick, different, intro riff, full band kind of riff. And, we just got to playing around with it. And you asked me if, everybody was like, into the idea of me doing some rapping. And although this band, even the ex-singer, he did some kind of like rap screaming and like, sure. they've kind of dipped their toe in that water a little bit, but you asked me if everybody was like down for me to do that. And actually the first song that I actually was experimenting with that style was Legends Never Die. And I kind of just did it on the bridge. We were working on that song, and like I had mentioned, I track my own vocals when we're in the building stages of a song. And I sent them that, and they were like, whoa, like, where did this come from? And it worked great in that song, but it's such a kind of a fast moment. It, sure. It comes and goes quickly in Legends Never Die that I wanted to expand on that more. And when I heard the kind of trap elements of Die About It, the track, I was like intrigued. I really wanted to try to go down that road more with it. And that wasn't something that I was able to demo on my own. That was a song that we started working on together. Max, Doc, and John actually started the earlier versions of that song. And then once I came to the studio with our engineer Joseph and our producer Josh Gilbert, I came in that day and I told everyone, I had written all the lyrics out for the verses in that song. And I told them what I wanted to try, and they were all just like, I don't know, man, like, let's see how this goes. And Josh Gilbert, also in Spirit Box, super talented dude, shout out Josh. And he was very instrumental that day in the studio in kind of directing my approach to how I was going to hit those verses in terms of doing the rapping style. And he kind of, cause I originally did it with a lot of dynamic. There was some ups and downs, and he kind of suggested that I kind of keep it in one lane and kind of do more of like a monotone take. And it actually was exactly what the song needed. I'm so proud of that one in terms of the experimentation and us trying something new and the way it came out. I think it's super cool and super fresh and not something that you hear every day. So
no, I think it fits, as you mentioned, it fits well within the song and what it's trying to convey, I think. And that sentiment of Die About It, kind of the way I see it, is kind of these days everything has become kind of a point of contention or a point of discussion, and it's kind of everything's a hill to die on. And is that kind of, am I accurate with that?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, obviously if you zoom out, there's more to it than that, but sure. I think at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people use that term cry about it. And I think that this was just like a more severe way, especially for people that were talking shit about our band and trying to take away our livelihood, even saying awful things about us that aren't true. Just really nasty, stupid internet stuff. And that was just kind of a more severe way of us saying, get the fuck over it, you know, die about it kind of thing. And that's also something that we talk about all the time in terms of like social media and the internet and how everybody, especially people in the entertainment industry and musicians, everybody's expected to be this like walking hot take or like the real life Truman Show. Like, sure. It almost doesn't feel like you're a musician anymore. And I kind of miss that. And I don't think enough, I know there's plenty of guys, I don't know if it's an age thing. It must not be, because there's a lot of guys my age and older that are really great at social media and love doing it. But I know for me growing up, the cool part about musicians and what I looked up to and what I admired in those guys was the mystique behind all of it. You had a favorite singer and you knew what his voice sounded like when he sang, but you always I always wondered, what does he sound like when he talks? I'll never know, but that was cool, man. That was like the mystique. He's just like a ninja. You never really know. And you read the articles about them in the hit paraders and all those, the magazines of the past. And, I miss that. I'm going to say it now. I bring the mystique back to the artist.
No, I agree wholeheartedly, even though I kind of contribute to the content around
Right. I mean,
people,
it's
you
the
know.
world we live in. We're doing it right now, right? So.
No, but I agree. Kind of the mystery is gone a little bit, and something should just remain behind closed doors, and it's none of our the public's business, and that's what I miss. Like if you, I'm a big Bob Dylan fan, and whenever he did an interview, he was as vague as possible, and it was kind of like you had to figure him out and kind of get a sense of him,
Yeah.
not by just overexposure, but just those little tidbits that you get from him.
Well, it's a privacy thing, right? And like
Right.
on top of that, it's a privacy thing. And yeah, I think that
Well, sorry to
I
interrupt.
no,
Oh, go.
go ahead.
No, because, and especially because you mentioned social media, and that's a different thing, right? Because everybody has an opinion about everything, and that makes it so much more difficult because the opinions get, pronounced immediately, so or they make those things immediately. So it's there's no contemplation, there's no hindsight or whatever. It's just whatever goes through your mind that goes on the internet, and
Yeah,
it's
it's verbal diarrhea.
exactly
There's a lot of internet verbal diarrhea, and I
exactly.
really don't like it. And I try to not be a part of that, but then you know we get there's expectations of us as a I you know
Sure.
I can't tell you how many times at this point I've heard that people that work with us work for us tell us that like this is a big part of your job. Like your job is not just to be, is not just to write music, is not just to go play shows. If anything, it's more so to sell yourself and market yourself and be on the internet and do the social media thing and give your opinions on topics that I, you know, to be
Has
honest,
nothing to do with music,
topics that
and
have nothing to do with music. And yeah, it's, so it's frustrating for me and it's tough, but we'll get through it, man. We work on it, and I want to get better at it because it's just it's the way that things are heading and it's never going to go away. So take it or leave it, I
No,
suppose.
but and getting back to the music, I mean, you have a song on the new record called "Move On," and that's one of the things that you kind of have to do, right? You kind of have to move on and keep going, and even if you go through dark times, it's just okay. Fuck it, I'm just gonna settle myself and
You got one
take it
life,
from
man.
here or start. Yeah, exactly.
That's it,
That
yeah.
no, that's a good segue to "Hungry for Life," because that line, "He became what he dreamt of at night when he was hungry for life." Well, if you think about your younger self, what were the kind of dreams you had about what your life would be?
I wanted to be this. I wanted to be a professional musician, and I think, you know, Hungry for Life is one of those songs that it's an existential song that kind of can speak to anybody. And I think at any given time in anybody's life, there's points where you're just not happy, where you're not happy, where you're not, or you're not satisfied with where you're at in life. You're not at the top position in your job. You're not making the money you want to make. I mean, and I think that that's something that plagues a lot of us in modern society. And I think the best way to remedy that is just focus and remember what your dreams were when you were growing up, if they're still the same, but always keep your dreams at the forefront of your mind. You have one life to live. Just be hungry for life and go get it. That's all we can do.
I think that's a good message for everybody. Let's go to set you on fire, because I really like the way you use your voice in that song. What was your approach, especially the first bit where it's very clean, and then you can really hear your voice, and then the music comes over the top. But what was your approach in that song, and how do you kind of convey the emotion you want in the studio or even at home?
For me, a song like that is so dependent on the dynamics of the vocal that that's all I had in my mind when I was doing it. I mean, obviously you're conveying the emotion of the lyric, but at the same time you have to listen to what's you have to serve the part and listen to what the song is doing. So, you know, the beginning is very chill. It's almost like a poppy kind of beginning. And then it works its way into the full band. And that's what's going through my head when I'm tracking it is, and that for me comes organically. I don't like think like, oh, I'm going to just sing soft on this part. Like that's just what I did. And Joseph was able to kind of capture that in the takes. And I could probably say that about every song, but that's one of my favorite songs on the record. And that was actually one of the earlier songs that we started working on that right after Dear Monsters. So, it's almost got like a pop tinge to it.
If you say it's one of your favorites, was it because it was kind of that new, fresh start with the band that you had, and you felt kind of okay, this is one of the first new offerings that we as a collective make?
Correct. Yeah. That was like a first iteration or like a first kind of look,
right,
at like what the vibe is going to be for the record. And I think that kind of carries throughout, like that Set You on Fire kind of set the theme for the record. Not in terms of lyrics or anything like that, sure. but definitely like the color of the song. It's a little more ethereal. Like it kind of soars a little more, and there's a little more of that pop tinge to it. So that was exciting, and that kind of like set the path for the rest of the songs.
The last song I liked, oh yeah, fair. The last song I want to delve into is NDA, because it's such a banger, I think. But musically it's also very interesting with the outro and the horns that are in there. How did that song take shape in a way, and how you mentioned how you write lyrics? Are you often influenced by the music in terms of your lyrics?
It's different every time. Okay. Yeah, it's different every time. And NDA is just another lyrically it touches on the theme of same, like I had mentioned earlier, that what we had gone through after Dear Monsters, and the split with the member changes and the legalities. And NDA is one of those songs where we're speaking as a group in NDA, to the tune of, like, in the past 2 years, we felt almost like silenced. Like we couldn't really, because of legalities, because of paperwork, and certain other things, that we couldn't really even defend ourselves when people were saying awful things about us. That, NDA is just a non-disclosure agreement. That's
sure.
That's what that song thematically is about. But shout out to Saxl Rose, who was the guy that did the horns on that song. He absolutely killed it. John, I think he had mentioned to him, like, to give it kind of like a Lethal Weapon. You know, when something explodes in Lethal Weapon, and like and the two cops are just standing there like looking at it, and then the smooth sax kind of intro transition music comes in. I think that's instantly what we heard. And and that's like the joke that we have. John always says it, Lethal Weapon ain't got shit on us now.
No, but I really like especially the kind of the outro, because when it first came in, I was my mind went to, okay, is this just going to be a little bit, and are they going back to the loud bits? Or and it's just sitting in that kind of ethereal sound, and then with the sax over top, it just really, I like the dynamics in that song.
Yeah, me too. And it's moving to hear horns on a heavy song like that. Like,
right.
You hear it all the time, and it just goes back to, it goes back to and enforces the fact of us wanting to just try different stuff. If you're not growing as a group, if you're not growing as a band, if you're not growing, if your material isn't growing with you, then like, what's the point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wants to just put out the same record all the time. And I think things like that, like the horns and rapping and whatever new stuff that we try, that might rub some people the wrong way because they're used to one thing and they're setting it. But that's important to us, is the growth. That's the most important to us at this point. So maybe on the next record we'll try some kazoos and harmonicas. Who knows? We're down for anything.
Oh, that's great to hear. And I recently spoke to a musician called Stephen Wilson, and he said something along the lines of having the confidence not to care what other people might think or what in this kind of creative process, just having the confidence to, well, I'm gonna try anything, and if I like it, that's enough for me, kind of. And I know you always have you owe so much to the fans, but at the same time, you can't kind of pander to them either, I think.
No, I think you're doing them and yourself a disservice if you do that. Because then, like, who knows what stone you could have turned over, and you could end up going down a really awesome path. And like, who cares? Try all the stupid shit you want. Like I said, we all have studios. We have pretty much unlimited resources in terms of production. So like, try all the stupid shit you want. If it sucks, throw it away. You know, the try again tomorrow. Yeah, I think that's a big thing from me coming in the band moving forward. That was always something that was a staple for us. It's like, never say no to anything. Give it a shot, try it. If it sucks, you know, we'll put it up to a vote. We'll see what happens. But like, try everything. And I think we did that gracefully and tastefully on this new album.
So one last question then, and now it's kind of around the time where you have to translate it into the live show. So how is that going? How are you feeling? I think you're touring with Bush in a couple of weeks.
Very
So
excited.
is the live show, are you kind of have you figured it out?
Never. I never figure it out. No. We the guys have been rehearsing. I'm going to be getting with them right at the beginning of the month in November. I think we're gonna do some cool stuff. We're gonna head over to I don't know if you heard of the company Sweetwater, but we're gonna do our rehearsals at the Sweetwater facility. So we're gonna have some filmed content and stuff
Okay.
there. Kind of behind the scenes, so you can kind of see how we deal with a rehearsal and what goes into that. So that will be cool. And really, it's just familiarizing yourself even more so, because I mean, we're very familiar with it, with the material. You hear the songs a million times before it gets released,
Sure.
but I think it's a different kind of familiarization when it comes time to play the parts and make it sound as close to the album, because there's a lot of layers on the album. There's so many layers, and we do use computers for like backing tracks and some of those layers. I mean, Saxl Rose, I mean, love him, but I don't think we can afford to take him on tour. But like, you know, songs like NDA, the sax will be running through the PA and all that stuff. But I think rehearsals, in terms of that stuff, fall a lot on the technicality side, is just like making sure all that stuff is in check, and making the songs sound as close to the album as possible with just the band, and then adding those elements after the fact.
Sounds good. Daniel, may I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Cool, man. Thanks so much for having me. I love talking to you guys.